Welcome to the Live Up podcast, where we revisit the movies from our youth to see if they live up. So we will review, discuss, and score whether the movie in question lives up to us now as adults and whether it lives up to the intended audience, kids today. So I'm Jess Latiman.
And I'm Amanda Treat. And on today's episode, we watched a movie that has us all asking, hello, is it Smee you're looking for? This is 1991. Look, Jess, this was a listener request, was it not?
Yes. So it was, I was visiting family in New York and my younger cousin, Jordana. Hello, Jordana. She's a listener. So that's exciting. So she's a little bit younger than us. So she's solid millennial, whereas I feel like you and I are called,
right on the edge. Yeah.
Yeah. We're like geriatric millennials slash young Gen X. So, you know, backhanded compliment there. Because she was too young. She was born in 1994. So not to age you, Jordana, sorry, but I did. So this movie came out before she was born. And so I was sort of surprised that it was something that hit the radar for her. Anyway, I should also mention we are going to actually hear from Jordana at the end of this episode, but we'll get to that later. So she's a solid millennial. And we're talking about the podcast and she said, you know, the movie that lives up to me the most and is my favorite movie is Hook. I loved that growing up and thought, okay, that'll be a good one to revisit. So thank you, Jordana, for the recommendation. So here we are. We watched it. We're doing it.
I do want to say, especially because this is a listener request and we love our listeners, I will highlight that the Live Up podcast, very scientific ratings, are really just our personal opinions. And to paraphrase what I once heard an Australian tour guide say at a wine vineyard when someone asked, how do you know if it's a good wine? She said, if you enjoy it, then it's a good wine. So if you enjoy Hook, it's a good movie.
I don't like this anecdote, Amanda, because I feel like what you're trying to say,
the eye of the beholder. Yes, the eye of the beholder.
A little too much eye of the beholder.
Let's leave it there for a minute. Jess, what's your history with this film?
I'll just say that I'm a little devastated over your lack of enthusiasm that I'm sensing. But I'll set that aside. I did watch it in the theater. I remember seeing it in the theater. I remember absolutely loving it. I actually didn't, even as a kid, to my knowledge or my memory, have any history with Peter Pan. I didn't watch the original Disney. Maybe if I watched like the live action from the 50s, I just didn't remember it. So I knew the story of Peter Pan, but didn't have any kind of attachment to it before I saw Hook. So in my mind, Hook is the Peter Pan story. I definitely watched this. This one's probably in the dozens, not like the hundreds, like some other movies we've rewatched, but we rewatch this a lot. And then I watched this with my kids and who also had zero Peter Pan reference before we saw this movie. But what is your history with Hook? And I hope it's a good history. It should be.
You're leading the witness, Jess.
Purposely so. I'm guilty, Your Honor.
So growing up, we had copies of both the pretty racist Disney version of Peter Pan, and then somehow we also had a copy of that pretty racist 1954 Mary Martin Peter Pan that we must have taped off a TV, but that's the play being performed as a musical. So both of those movies kind of set my expectations for Peter Pan, and they were both like really freewheeling and fun, and again, totally, totally racist.
Yeah.
So the good news about Hook is that aside from a vague mention of like one adventure with Tiger Lily, they just cut that whole part out and like got those characters out of there. And so Hook is not racist. Very low bar here.
Yay, good job, Hook.
Oh my God.
And, yeah. And I should mention here that we, after watching Hook, my kids then wanted to watch the original 1953 Disney, the animated.
We're going to have to talk about that.
Yes, we're going to talk about that in a bonus episode.
So yeah, going into Hook, I also saw this in the theater. I'm pretty sure it was opening weekend. And I remember the hype around this movie because it was like, oh my God, Steven Spielberg. Oh my God, Robin Williams. Oh my God, Julia Roberts, who was like fresh off a Pretty Woman. I also remember running into one of my friends from camp coming out of the movie theater as we were like lined up to walk in, and she was like, oh my God, it was amazing. And so like my level of expectations, like the hype was so high, and I went and watched it, and I remember as a kid feeling a little let down and disappointed
when
I saw it in the theater.
I continue to be just sort of like amazed because Hook is what, 90 or 91?
91.
So you were 11. I was 11. You were 12. And yeah. I'm sort of amazed that you have that sophisticated of a mindset to be aware and like be disappointed in something you've watched. Like, I don't think I remember being disappointed in a movie at that age.
That's amazing. I think I was expecting like fireworks and amazingness. And like, I'd seen.
Because it is amazing.
I'd seen Good Morning Vietnam by that point, which I know is R, but like it's R because of the swearing and because Robin Williams tells his boss that he needs a blowjob at the end of the movie, which was a fun vocabulary thing to learn. And I'd seen Dead Poets Society. So like I knew Robin Williams could take it to 11 and I was like waiting for him to do that in this movie. And we'll talk about his performance in a little bit, but like, I think it was just my expectations were super, super high. And this movie just didn't get there for me when I was an 11-year-old. So yeah,
I guess
maybe adult me is a little more charmed. We'll get into that. But that's what my history with this movie was.
I really hope adult you is more charmed. I think I had an awareness of Robin Williams, but I don't think to the point where I would have had an expectation for him to be off the wall funny. I mean, I know this predates Aladdin.
Yeah.
But I had
that
an
was,
awareness.
That was a moment where I was like, there he is. He's back.
Right. Yeah. But I had an awareness of who he is. I mean, I had no idea who, as a 12-year-old or 11-year-old, who any of the other actors were.
You didn't know Julia Roberts at that point?
Oh, I guess I knew. I probably knew Julia Roberts, but it didn't have like a specific, I'm going to go see this movie because Julia Roberts is in it.
Yeah. She was super.
She was
like
a star.
America's sweetheart at that moment because Pretty Woman had just come out. And she was everywhere right then.
But yeah, so I didn't have the feelings of disappointment. In fact, I liked it so much. I'm sure my brother and I watched it over and over again. So did you not watch it again? After?
No, I haven't seen it since I was 11.
So you saw it that one time in the theater and then the second time.
And now right I rewatched it earlier this week.
It's killing me.
So we'll see what it came out as.
I will say also, I watched with my wife, with Elena, and she had never seen it either. She had never seen it at all. This was her first viewing.
Be interested to hear a, like, only an adult take on it.
Yeah, we'll get into that. We'll get into whether she was charmed as an adult.
All right, Jess, do you care to remind our listeners what the movie Hook is about?
Sure thing. It's essentially, Hook is a middle-aged man's redemption story disguised as a fairy tale. That's what it is. But who needs Peter Pan as a kid? Not me. I like him better as a dumpy middle-aged man. I do. So it takes place after the story of Peter Pan. And so Peter Pan grows up. He's an adult and he doesn't remember being Peter Pan. Hook steals his children. He has to go back and rescue them. And amazingness. I'm so biased. But I think it is essentially a redemption middle-aged man story, kind of. That's what it is.
Yeah, no, they show him being a crappy father. He misses his son's baseball game. He's taking cell phone calls during his daughter's theater performance. Although, you know how I feel about getting dragged to kids' theater performances.
I do. We have a whole episode about recital performances.
So you were watching this as a parent for the first time, it sounds like. What was that like?
Yeah. So I think parent, but I don't want to say just for parents here for watching as an adult, but because I watched it so much, I should say this was especially because of the story of Peter Pan, which is about not wanting to grow up. I mean, this is essentially a total reversal of perspective when you've seen it as a kid. And maybe you relate to Robin Williams as Peter Pan. You love The Lost Boys and Peter Pan's kids, Jack, and I actually forget his daughter's name. But then watching it as an adult, I know, maybe.
I'm laughing because that's not a good sign.
It's not a good sign. I don't remember the daughter's name. So, but then watching it now as an adult and then for me as a parent, like it's a completely different perspective because I am grown up. You're grown up. Everyone's grown up watching this. And you don't relate to The Lost Boys anymore, but I can certainly relate to the middle-aged redemption story now. I guess the idea of trying to conjure your youth. I mean, there's a lot to then relate to from the different perspective. So I thought that was kind of cool. Can you remember as a kid finding The Lost Boys relatable, or did you find Robin Williams relatable now, or even Hook?
So, okay, three questions there. I think
three.
In terms of finding The Lost Boys relatable as a kid, I came away with the opinion this time, and I probably had the same opinion last time, like you don't spend enough time with any of them individually to really feel connected to them. So it was like, yeah, they're kids and they're like having fun and they're playing, but it was kind of like you're watching them from a distance almost. Like you're not playing with them. I think they're not unlikable, but like I just didn't feel connected to any of them. And I think Kid Me probably felt the same way, like, oh, there's a bunch of characters here and they're throwing the names around so fast. I don't know who's who. I don't know what the what is. I even remember as a kid at the end when Peter Pan has to like pick the next leader and give his sword over. He gives it to that one kid. I think his name's like Thudbutt or something. Like, really,
I don't remember their name.
But that's the thing. Like, he gives it to this kid, and I remember as a kid thinking, like, "Oh, that's random. Why'd he pick him?" And didn't have any memory of any of the dialogue between them or like any connection at all. So yeah, it just felt really detached, I think, from the individual Lost Boys. But yeah, there were a bunch of kids running amok. And
I remember liking that as a kid, because who doesn't want to run amok and have no rules and all of that stuff.
I mean that's appealing. I just didn't feel like involved the way you get connected with like the kids in like Stand By Me or like,
right. Ooh, we should do
I'm trying to think of another. I don't know why I'm going to Ninja Turtles. I don't feel like a Ninja Turtle when I watch that.
do you relate to a mutant turtle?
It's all the ninja-ness, really. In terms of relating to Peter, now that I'm watching as an adult, there's definitely moments where his older son, Jack, is being so annoying. Like when he's throwing the baseball in the airplane, I was just like, oh my God, stop this kid.
I know. That's the part where it's like slightly relatable for
us. So yeah, they're like trying to make him evil because he like snaps at his kid, but the kid's being an asshole. So like, honestly, that was a little bit relatable. And then similarly, and this is just me being cranky, when Hook does his fake school, it's just like, why parents hate their children? And like, it's funny and it's supposed to be over the top, but he's just like, before you came along, your parents used to stay up late talking and looking at the stars. And I was like, you know, he's got a point there.
Yeah. I mean,
like the little girl who I believe is named Maggie.
That's right.
She was like, you're lying. And I'm like, yeah, he's not lying. I wouldn't necessarily say relatable, but I did find amusement in Captain Hook telling them that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. And this is a line from Maggie, now that I remember, that I didn't remember, but I found it to be so funny, especially as an adult, when Maggie's like the younger daughter. She's been kidnapped by the pirates, you know, she and her brother and Captain Hook, and her dad, who's, you know, secret Peter Pan, can't quite rescue them. So they're sort of trapped with the pirates, and the pirates are just acting like pirates, like, arg. And she's like, you need a mommy. Like, and she said something to that effect. And it was so funny because you're like, yeah, they kind of do need a mommy. Yeah. And so I thought it was funny. And that was also a line that my cousin Jordana like brought up as something that's very funny. And that there's a lot of quotable lines in here, and that being one of them. Like,
you'd mentioned in the notes that your cousin and you, I think, had a bunch of what you recall as quotable lines, but since I'd only seen it when I was 11 and now rewatching it, like, what were those quotable lines to you guys?
I have to say, I didn't remember that it was quotable. I remember when Jordana was like, oh, it's a very quotable movie. And I'm thinking like, really? I mean, you think about the iconic lines of some of the movies we've watched, even the ones we didn't like Ferris Bueller and things like that. There's some iconic lines in there.
Yeah, they've like entered the culture, and I can't think of any of the lines from Hook that entered the culture.
They,
but
they
like,
really haven't, but they're really funny.
There's some funny lines in there, though.
You know, you need a mommy, or even Toodles, who's the old man, who at the beginning is like, I've lost my marbles. And then at the end, he gets his actual marbles returned to him. And it's like, Toodles really did lose his marbles. Or there's other great lines that Smee has too. Like, I've had an apostrophe, meaning, you know, now I'm going to forget the actual word. An epiphany, yeah. So that's funny. I just had an apostrophe.
All right, so we like to do breakdowns by characters, and even though this movie's called Hook, he's not the main character. The main event, obviously, is Robin Williams as the adult Peter Pan, so let's take a deep dive on him. So Peter, whose last name is Banning, it's like so close, but not.
So close.
He's been adopted by Americans, he's got an American accent. He's kind of that archetype of a bad dad. He's too obsessed with work. He's got his cell phone. His colleagues are calling him constantly. He's ignoring his kids. Misses the baseball game. Pulls the cell phone out during a play. He is so not fun at the beginning of this movie.
He's very not Robin Williams.
It sounds like Robin Williams had a really difficult time playing the character in the beginning because he just was like, I don't get why he's such an asshole.
Yeah, he's kind of dull. I guess he's supposed to be dull. he's just subdued, I think. Yeah. Subdued. He's a subdued Robin Williams, I guess.
We had a similar discussion when we talked about Who Framed Roger Rabbit. When you have a kid's movie and the main character is a not fun middle-aged guy, that's like a really hard character to latch onto for kids. Like, I'm not cheering for him at the beginning of this at all.
Right, like, yeah, you're cheering.
Kind of halfway through, still not cheering for him. It's like, oh, the pirates are way more fun here.
you're like pro-Hook.
A little. I mean, the movie's called Hook. It should be about Hook.
And, you know, it's a fine performance by Dustin Hoffman, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
You know, there's one funny part as the dumpy middle-aged man where, you know, this is a quotable line that I think is funny, where he's trying to reach, you know, Hook is basically like, yeah, you dumpy man, if you could fly up or reach your kids who are like suspended in the air and in a net and touch them, I'll release them. And of course he can't do it. And he's trying to reach, and his daughter Maggie is like, mommy could do it.
Yeah, I did love that one. It was just, was pretty I mean, funny. She's constantly, she keeps placing the mom over him, which is funny, right up to the end, because right when they go to leave Neverland, it's like, all right, kids, you just have to think happy thoughts. And she's like, mommy, like, right in his face.
I know. That was funny. And I found, you know, him trying to get himself into shape. And this is also Robin Williams then slowly through the process as trying to remember himself becomes kind of Robin Williams too. Like, I mean, his slapstick funniness comes out.
Honest to God, distracted. There's that moment they put him in a slingshot because they're going to teach him how to fly again.
Yeah.
They've like shaved Robin Williams. Like, he's in my head is like so hairy, like his right. arm hair and everything. And
oh
like,
my God, you're right. Shaved. He's totally bare.
It's just like, ah, like, what are you? Why
poor lost boy had to do that?
Yeah.
I like his evolution even as an adult again. I didn't find it confusing, his evolution from bad dad to hero dad. It didn't bother me, that evolution at all. Or there was nothing wrong with it. I like
in there.
I liked it. I thought then he became funnier and funnier. And there's also again another great quotable line at the beginning, when he's basically in a super boring way describing what he does for a living to Wendy, who's, you know, the old grandmother Maggie Smith at this point.
Granny Wendy.
And he's talking about how he's a lawyer who does mergers and acquisitions and he takes over companies and, you know, insert boring language here. And, you know, Wendy looks at him, he's like, so you've become a pirate?
Oh, and she just goes, Peter, you've become a pirate.
Oh, and it's like,
it's that perfect Maggie Smith, like, judgmental sentence.
Super judgmental. Yeah.
It could have been a line in Downton Abbey. She delivers that so well.
Yeah. And my kids, especially my daughter, liked that it's, you know, Professor McGonagall from Harry Potter also in this movie, who, by the way, they made Maggie Smith look like a million years old in this
she
movie.
She is 53 when they're filming.
They this. Made her look 100. I mean,
her character is supposed to be like 91. And they cast a 53-year-old woman and put all of that makeup on her and gave her a cane and they keep making her pass out.
It's crazy.
Oh my goodness.
But that was such a great line to me. So, yeah. You know, Peter, you become a pirate. I mean, again, that just hit the whole emotional part to me, but also just, it was a good line. And I think it set his character on a good, interesting path to me, even rewatching it.
So I do like the arc of him having to go find his youthful self. I think what I was saying before about Robin Williams and knowing how great he could be, because I think he's good in this, but I feel like he never really gets let off the leash, like that they're keeping
I think that's
him
fair.
A little subdued. And
yeah.
What I want to see in an adult Peter Pan played by Robin Williams is that full, let's take this to 11, the ad-libbing, the crazy, the like energy that Robin Williams can bring to a part. And it feels like they're not letting him get there. And I feel like I'm missing that.
Yeah, I guess. And I think this is where you're more sophisticated than me, Amanda, because like it didn't bother me as much. And it did cross my mind that, yes, this is not Aladdin Genie. This is not Jumanji.
You should have an absolutely batshit crazy Peter Pan.
But I was okay with it not being batshit crazy, I guess. This is maybe my nostalgia just overtaking
we're
it.
We're going to, we'll agree to disagree. Like, yeah. I wanted to see Robin Williams at 11. So
yeah, I guess.
I just feel like I missed out on seeing Robin Williams as Peter Pan just take it as far as it could go.
And I guess I appreciated him a lot as like a dumpy middle-aged person. I mean, it was a little bit of a punch in the face to we middle-aged people now in terms of not being able to keep up and all that stuff. Maybe that part was relatable enough to me that I forgave or didn't even realize how, like, what wasn't there. I didn't realize the negative of like, there's no Aladdin genie type craziness going on.
All right. Well, do we want to talk about the namesake of this movie, even though he's not the main character?
Yeah, Justin Hoffman playing Hook. So good. So good.
Now, I don't think as a kid, I don't think I'd ever seen anything with Dustin Hoffman in it. So this is probably my first time seeing him. I thought he was great in this.
I think I saw Rain Man before.
Oh, yeah. He was in that.
So I love his campy take on Hook. I, in some ways, I feel like this is his finest performance, even including Rain Man.
He reminds me of Alice Cooper in a weird way. I'm not sure what it is. It's like this mix of funny and a little bit clever and a little bit scary and just flamboyant and over the top. I do really like this character.
Alice Cooper. Yeah, Alice Cooper. I could see that. He was just so camp.
He's so strutting around his costume, his
wig,
and he's got a baseball mitt prosthetic that he can switch the hook out for, which I thought was funny.
Yeah, he's super vain. And I know that that's the general character of Hook, but he plays it so well. I think that for years, maybe still now as an adult, when I see Dustin Hoffman in a movie, the first place in my mind goes is his character Hook. Like, it's just the first thing I think about. I think he was just perfectly vain, and with the wig, and with the, he's like trying to be this gentleman, like my great and worthy opponent when he refers to Peter Pan.
Yeah, he's very formal.
Yeah.
And absolutely chaotic, but in a very predictable way. Like when you see him disapprove of something on the pirate ship, you're like, he's going to shoot and kill that pirate. And he immediately does it. And it's not that it's predictable. It's just like, no, he's got a set of rules that he's following here.
Yeah.
That guy broke the rules. So I get to shoot him now.
I get to shoot him. And I think he had a great entrance. There's pirates everywhere. It's crazy pirates. The kids are up in the net. And he just like bursts out onto the ship. And he tries to like sniff out a doubter. And he's like, who doubted me?
Well, did you notice who that was? Because
I
did not. Did you see after the fact who it was?
Yeah, I only saw in your notes.
Yeah.
Do the reveal, Amanda.
That was a weird cameo from Glenn Close, who's dressed as a male pirate. They've covered her in prosthetic facial hair, and they put her in the boo box with the scorpions because she didn't believe in Hook, he didn't believe in Hook. I think that pirate has some name too that's like the Wuss or something like that. Like
that's funny.
But like, I think it's hilarious that Glenn Close is like, yeah, I want to be a pirate and I want to be put in the box of scorpions. Let's do
for
this
for like
movie.
30
I'm
seconds.
Ready.
I'm going to be a pirate. But it's just a funny entrance. It just sets the stage for him. I just loved him as Hook. And even my wife, who had not seen this movie at all before, was like, wow. We both really loved it.
Okay, I want to jump ahead and talk about Smee, played by Bob Hoskins.
Let's talk about him. Loved it.
He is my favorite thing about this movie. Like, he got the memo of this is what this movie is supposed to be. He understood the assignment. He comes dancing into the scene. He's got the hook. He's shaking his ass. He's the hype man for Hook. He gives a big speech. He's doing stand-up comedy. Like, he's a pirate, but he's the jolly kind of pirate when we're always like, yay, pirates are fun.
Oh, yeah.
He's the kind of pirate that makes pirate fun. He's so hilarious in this role. Like, everything he's doing in the background, he's like constantly just stealing things or taking people's food and like having so much fun. And yeah, he really makes the movie for me to the point that I really want more Hook and Smee scenes.
Yeah, no, he's so funny. And so I love that Bob Hoskins was in this. I forgot that he was in it. And for those who don't know who, you know, he's otherwise known as Eddie Valiant from Who Framed Roger Rabbit, amongst other things. Totally brilliant in this. You're totally right. He's just lights up the screen. He's such a caricature of a pirate, and yet he's also the caricature of the doting assistant on the tyrant that you're working for, which is funny.
Here's a funny thing I came across, and I really hope it's true.
Let's spread some rumors.
He and Dustin Hoffman during rehearsal turned to each other and were like, are Captain Hook and Smee gay? And they're like, Yes. Yes, they are.
You definitely get that vibe.
And that the two of them decided to play them as secret lovers the whole time, and they took it to
I buy it.
Spielberg, and Steven Spielberg was like, "Guys, this is a kids' movie. Stop giving backstories that aren't in the script." And they were like, "No, they're gay." Going into the movie, they were just like, "Yeah, we've just decided that these two characters are gay, and we're just gonna make them dote on each other." Like, they are really adorable together. Like the way they're giving each like foot massages or like hyping each other up and
Yeah, there's
stuff.
definitely
Like,
an intimacy there. I mean,
yeah, it's very sweet.
yeah, when I definitely get the gay vibe, and the whole one super uber dramatic partner and one trying to center, which is Hook, and then Smee ineptly trying to placate's the wrong word, but he's just trying to like make it all better. He's just trying to
Yeah.
like put band-aids on the boo-boos and give him
He's a
kisses.
really good boyfriend if these two are gay.
That's so funny. Except he has a great exit of the movie where
He's
he
like
basically
looting.
he loots everything. He's like, I'm out. Like there's like chaos fighting
He's got
going
like
on.
candelabras down his pants, like, I'm
He's
leaving,
like,
goodbye.
I'm out of here. So that was a great exit, I think, for
So
Smee.
my line at the top of the show is reference to, I was reading up on how much Bob Hoskins was just enjoying this whole movie. I'm gonna have so much fun with it. He was probably looking at Robin Williams because he'd just come off of Roger Rabbit, where he plays like the middle-aged, dumpy, like sour
Right,
person.
yeah, the
And
middle-aged redemption arc,
yeah,
that's what
watching
life
Robin
is.
Williams have to play that role, like,
Yeah.
ha, sucker, like, I don't have to do that this time. But it sounds like there were moments where it got really tense on set, like some of the people weren't getting along, and that Bob Hoskins was going around sneaking up on people and singing Lionel Richie's Hello, only changing it to, is it Smee you're looking for? But like coming up very dramatic behind people, which I just find that so charming. And now I've had like Lionel Richie's Hello in my head since I watched this movie the other day and found that out. But like, I love that. It sounds like things got stressful and or a scene got cut after they put all this work into it. And he was just buying beer for the crew and just being that guy on the
It
set.
sounds like he's Smee in real life.
It sounds like, he just made it really better for like everyone else to come to work that day. He was that guy who was making everybody happy. I love Bob Hoskins anyway, but it just sounded like he was great to work with on this, and it looks like he's having a fun time. So,
Oh my
love
God.
it.
If I want to like go out for a beer with someone in this movie, it is 100% Smee.
Definitely Smee. Smee's
Definitely
the
Smee.
most fun of anyone in this
Yeah,
movie. Like, yes,
definitely.
I would get drunk with Smee. And
Definitely,
then
I
he'd
would
probably
definitely get
steal
drunk
my
with me.
wallet and my phone and pocket it.
But it would be worth it, so it's fine. So shall we circle back to Tinkerbell, who played
Yeah.
by Julia Roberts?
Oh, she is god awful in this. And I like
Which
Julia
is
Roberts.
she?
She's terrible. It's.
I didn't think she was terrible, but I want to hear why you think she's terrible.
Well, okay, so I think it's partially her fault from the sounds of it. So, like, if we want to get gossipy, so she's 23 years old when they're making this
Get
movie.
out. Oh, God, they're so
I
old.
know, it felt like she was like so much older and more mature than us, but like, yeah. So picture you as a 23-year-old and me as a 23-year-old. If big turbulent things are going on in your life, you're gonna like lash out and be an idiot about it. So she was engaged to Kiefer Sutherland. They were just about to get married as this movie's going on, and he cheated on her. And then to retaliate, she cheated on him. So like the paparazzi's all over her. They call off the engagement, and she just abruptly left this movie to like go to Ireland. And Steven Spielberg just like lost his shit at her. What are you doing? Like, we have a contract. You're shooting this movie. Like, get your
Yeah.
ass back here. She and Spielberg were fighting the whole time. She got this nickname Tinkerhell on the set because she
Did
was
she
just
really?
being a cranky asshole to everybody. And, all right, yeah, you just found out your fiance cheated on you, although then you cheated on him. But yeah, so it sounds like she was just doing immature prima donna, I'm a little bit traumatized behavior. And yeah, just wasn't flying. That's going on. But then at the same time, because her character is a fairy and is not the same human size as all the other actors, like she's just green screening everything left and right. It just felt like she's very separate from everyone. Yeah, I don't know. It jumped out at me. It was like, it's not really in sync here. She's not in the flow of the dialogue.
I feel like I didn't get as deep with it with her. There are performances in movies that really bother me and are noticeably not good. And I just didn't, none of this stuff surfaced for me. I think,
Yeah.
I mean, I think in some ways, Tinkerbell, I have to, the second she came on screen, I was like, oh yeah, Julia Roberts is in this. I had
Yeah.
forgotten that Tinkerbell was a character, even, I mean,
Well,
really.
and that's another thing. when you watch the Disney version or you watch that old play where it's just the light making noises and she doesn't talk, that Tinkerbell was always portrayed as this is Peter's buddy, but she's very possessive of him. But this time she's like thirsty for him. That one scene where like she grows to life size and makes out with him is just so disconcerting to me.
So that was the one point in the movie where that I didn't like, because I found it just like, do we need this?
I don't think he belongs
But
there.
it made more sense to me. So for folks who don't remember, it's basically, so just like you said, she turns life size and confesses kind of her crush on him in some ways, on him being Peter Pan. So after I'd seen this movie and my kids wanted to watch the original Disney, the entire plot of the 1953 Disney movie is essentially a three-way love triangle. I mean, a big part of the plot is that Tinkerbell is possessive of Peter Pan against Wendy. And there's a little bit of Tinkerbell versus Wendy in the Disney movie. So after I watched the Disney movie, it made sense to me then that they played the quote unquote modern Tinkerbell is having the scene, but it did seem very out of place. It just, because to me, like, she's just like this fun side character. Oh, lost boys, blah blah blah. She helps him fly home. She's not driving the plot, but she's not
She's a
evil.
helper character,
Yeah,
and
she's a
like
helper character, and she's pleasant. It just didn't. But then when she grows life size and like tries to make out with him, it's kind of weird. It is kind of like, what's going
Yeah.
on here?
First of all, when she knew Peter, he was a kid, like 12-year
Oh
old
yeah, I guess
boy.
that's weird.
Yeah, for her to be like thirsty for him this whole time and wanting to make out with him, like I don't, it just felt cringy. Like I don't like that angle on her. Like it got a little
Yeah.
sexual and that was ugh.
And I'm not like necessarily clutching my pearls over it. It just had no place in the movie. I didn't feel one way or the other about Tinkerbell for the most part.
Yeah.
I think if you were to make it today, you would probably make it a character with like a little bit more interesting background. So my kids really liked this movie, just to give away the game here. They loved Hook. They loved Peter. They loved the Lost Boys. But I think if I asked them right now, they probably would forget that she was in it. It was like a nothing to them.
The other thing I just can't help but say is I hate her hair so much.
I love
Her
her
haircut
hair.
is awful. I
What's
get that
wrong
it's pixie cut and she's a fairy, and isn't it great that the fairy has a pixie cut? But like, no.
Listeners, there's nothing wrong with her hair. Amanda's just being a
I
Debbie Downer here about everything.
hate that haircut. She
Nothing
looks like
wrong
a
with the
middle, she looked like a middle-aged extra on Married with Children with that haircut. All right. We got a couple other characters we want to get to. Talk about Rufio and the Lost Boys.
I think they're like the cutest boys you could possibly cast.
Yeah. No, they went for cute kids, except for Rufio, who the reason he was cast as Rufio, Spielberg was like, "You're the only one who scared the hell out of me at the auditions." And like he
That's
is
funny.
scary. Like he's got that vibe of like if you ran into a gang of Rufios, you'd probably be like, "Oh God, these teenagers, like what do they want from me? Like
Yeah,
get out of the
he's
ah."
sort of, but like in an innocent way. Like to me, he just felt like more backup dancers to Michael Jackson's Bad video.
He's a kid ultimately, but like, yeah, he just has sort of a snarl to him that gives off a
Yeah.
little bit of intimidation. My favorite line from him is they're not sure what to do with Peter, and he just yells, "Kill the lawyer!" And they all start chasing him. And it was like, yeah, that's actually pretty funny.
It was kind of funny because at first they're like, we kill pirates, and Robin Williams is like, I'm not a pirate, I'm a lawyer. And then Rufio's like, kill the
Kill the
lawyer. And they're
lawyer.
like, okay. I will say my kids really liked the Lost Boys, and especially my son who's younger, who's six.
The one thing I don't like actually is the way he dies and that they just kind of move on
Yeah, I
from
forgot.
it. It just doesn't carry the gravitas that I think it deserves. And also, I think his sword fight with Captain Hook is actually more interesting than the fight with Peter Pan and Captain Hook at the end.
Yeah, this at this point in the plot, Rufio has come around. Like, he's really skeptical of Peter Pan. Doesn't like now being second fiddle. There's like a jealousy there.
Yeah.
As soon as Peter Robin Williams remembers who he is and becomes Peter Pan during that iconic, I'm gonna call it an iconic scene where they have a food fight and all the food is like this fluorescent color. And at first they're served like totally empty bowls. I think Rufio pretends to start the food fight and Robin Williams is like, what is going on? And then as soon as Robin Williams just gets into it and he scoops up invisible whipped cream and tosses it,
Oh,
you
you
see
thought
it.
that was whipped cream. I thought that was mashed
Oh,
potatoes,
I guess
like
it was
food
mashed
coloring.
potatoes,
I don't
but
know
it's
what
like
it is.
fluorescent. It's
Lumps
like
of
fluorescent
thing that are
neon color.
fluorescent colors. Yeah.
It's a little much, but then you see it land on like Rufio's face, and you're like, oh, now we could see what the Lost Boys see. At this point, before he dies, he came on side for Peter's side against the pirates. Again, this is not supposed to be a serious movie. And as they're sword fighting, I was thinking, oh shit, does Rufio die? I forget. Yeah. And I guess you didn't need him to die, but I guess you kind of just held, I don't know. I guess you needed to move on to the next phase too.
I mean,
he died a hero's death.
He did. Oh, except I really dislike he's dying in Peter's arms. And he's like, I always wished I had a dad like you. And it's like, you've known him for 2.5 days. You guys hated each other at first. Like, he hasn't done any parenting to you. You only got along because he turned into a kid. Like, that line just felt so forced.
I guess.
I don't know. It just felt like they shortchanged Rufio really badly right there.
But overall, though, I thought the Lost Boys were still great. Even as an adult, I think they're still fun. They're the cutest kids you've ever seen in your life.
They are cute. They got mad engineering skills. They've, like, built a racetrack, and they're building a chicken egg shooter, and they've got a riverboat at one point that they've engineered, and all looks like silly and crazy. Like,
it looks like a kid's paradise, and it still resonates with kids, or at least mine. And even as an adult, I was like, they're cute. I love them. To me, they're so sweet. Like, how do you not? What's wrong with them, Amanda? What's
going on? I'm not hating on them. They're fine. All right. Do you want to talk about some of the other characters? And by other characters, I am leaning towards, there's a million cameos in this movie.
There is. This is like the second movie we've done with a lot of cameos.
A lot of cameos.
So many cameos. The most surprising cameo, which I completely forgot about and couldn't believe, was Gwyneth Paltrow plays Young Wendy. And this is the sequence where Peter's sort of remembering who he is and remembers going back to visit Wendy. And then I'm like, oh my God, Wendy's Gwyneth Paltrow.
It's distracting at this point because it's Gwyneth Paltrow. It's just like, she's in a skiing accident.
Right? I couldn't get that out of my head.
She's fine. It's like a throwaway part. There's a police inspector, and like, this scene does not need to be in there other than the fact that Phil Collins is the police inspector.
What is Phil Collins doing in this movie?
Like, it is silly. Is that Phil Collins with a mustache?
What was that? That was so funny to me.
Yeah. Did you notice David Crosby in there as a pirate?
I did not.
He pops up in an earlier scene, but then later in the like battle scene at the end, he just goes out with a shot to the nuts. Like, one of the Lost Boys just hits him with a board in the nuts and he like falls over. And if you ever wanted to see David Crosby get hit in the nuts, we've got the perfect movie for you, because that's how he goes.
I put this in the category of really awesome things about this movie. That chaotic pirate classic pirate fight scene at the end to me was so fun. It was chaotic in the best way. So of course there's pirates getting hit in the nuts, and they're a well-known actor, you know, well-known cameo. Yeah. Like, it's so funny.
Like, at what point did David Crosby call Steven Spielberg and be like, "Ooh, I heard you're making a Peter Pan movie. Can I be in it as a pirate?
Yeah. And can I die by getting hit in the nuts?
Can I get hit in the nuts to death?" Yes. So super random. What else?
I mean, it's not a cameo, but his actual kids, not his actual kids, Peter Pan's actual kids, Jack and Maggie, who I keep
forgetting. Yeah.
I think they went on to do some other things. Like, I think that Jack...
the kid who's the son was in a few movies, but he's actually a lawyer now. So he's lived up to Peter's
remember him from Can't Hardly Wait.
He's in Can't Hardly Wait. Yeah, that's right.
I like the Jack character. I remember the Jack character looming more large for me as a kid. Then as an adult, I was too much enjoying the other parts of it. But, you know, he's fine. He's good.
I was super harsh on him watching it as an adult, because I was like, A, this kid sucks at baseball. He is swinging at like the worst pitches. He's a shitty baseball. Yeah, like totally judging him for that. And then like, he's super irritating on the airplane when he's throwing the baseball up at the ceiling and like breaks the plane a little bit.
One thing though with baseball is I really enjoyed the scene. I remember enjoying this as a kid. Hook is trying to get Peter's kids to actually like him as a father figure instead of Peter Pan, and basically choose Hook over Peter at some point. And so Hook knows that Peter did not go to his son's baseball game. So Hook stages this whole baseball game, and they basically play pirate baseball, which is like the most amazing chaos baseball you've ever
seen. It is. Yeah. When they shoot that guy for stealing home, like, that's funny. That's a good guy.
I know that it's gratuitous.
And you're getting the full Smee energy in the scene. Like, he's just being a ridiculous pitcher. And yeah, that scene's a lot of fun.
It's so much fun. And they even get things wrong. Instead of holding up the signs, home run, it says run home. And it's all just really funny. I can watch an entire game of pirate baseball. It's so fun.
Oh yeah, that should be a sport. It's
It
like
should be.
corgi racing. It's like on ESPN8 when there's no other games to show. They've got pirate baseball and corgi racing.
Pirate baseball would be great. I know MLB just made all these changes, but let's just throw this
You
in.
should be able to take a shot if someone's stealing home. Pirate
Maybe
baseball,
more like
please.
a dart gun, but you know, still.
Got ya. You're out.
Yeah, so I enjoyed that part of the movie.
The only one I didn't see it again, and I knew it was in there. Apparently, when Tinkerbell comes, gets Peter, and she's like carrying him away in a blanket, that they go over a bridge in London, and it's Carrie Fisher and George Lucas standing there, like about to make out.
Get out of here.
Which Carrie Fisher was popping by set a lot, and I think she did some script doctoring on this, and then George
Oh.
Lucas's company did the sound. Sounds like a lot of people just showed up on the set and were like just hanging around.
Sort of like the carnival scene in the Muppet movie that we just reviewed, where it's like everybody showed up,
Yeah,
everyone
it's
in the
just,
70s showed
you
up.
know, hey, I'm
Yeah.
making this movie. Mind if I drop by? We'll put a hat on you. You can be in it.
You could be a pirate.
Yeah, so
I think there was a lot to like about this movie, Amanda. What did you
leading the
like about it? I want to
witness.
make you say nice things about this movie.
Oh yeah. No, I mean there are things that are genuinely awesome about this movie. Like the set design, I want to go visit Granny Wendy's house. Like the way it just
Yeah, it's
has
pretty
that like
amazing.
Christmassy glow about it. I was reading Roger Ebert's article or his review of this movie, and he actually hated the set design for this.
Really?
Yeah,
What?
he just thought that particularly the part around like the pirate ship, that it was just so drab and brown and that it looked very much like a movie set and it just ruined it for him. I think it's fine that it kind of
Added
looks
to
like
the
a theatrical
charm.
stage, but like I
Yeah.
think that's okay here because it's all supposed to be pretend anyway and like yeah,
Right. To me,
make it
it
look
added
like
to the
that.
texture of the charm. I liked it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he wanted a more like verdant, green, lush Rainforesty Neverland, or I don't know
Yeah.
what else. I actually really like that banquet scene. Robin Williams was like ad-libbing a little bit, but also they weren't letting him go out of character. So you got kind of like a contained Robin Williams is making lawyer jokes, but they're not that funny because he's not really putting the punch into them. But I really like that scene where you see all the like Lost Boys kind of stand up one at a time. They're all elderly and they're all kind of giving a tribute to Granny Wendy. That part's really sweet. And you
I thought it was a
see,
nice scene. I don't even remember that scene watching it as a kid. But
yeah.
again, in the plot, yeah, this is where Peter, the
Granny Wendy's
lawyer.
getting an award because
Yeah.
she's been so helpful placing all these orphans throughout her
Yeah, it was sort
53-year-old
of.
life. Yes. And then I actually do think the ending where Toodles gets his marbles back and he's like, my happy thoughts, and just kind of flies off.
I just still
It's
like
kind of
that
a nice
line. He
way. Yeah.
really did lose his marbles.
Nice way to close it. So yeah, there's things I do like about this movie, and
Yeah.
those are a few of them.
So, usually when you're starting with what did you like about this movie and you go to the set design, I know it's not going to be great, but
Oh.
I still love the lines. I think all the lines we talked about, I have an apostrophe, mommy could do it, my great and worthy opponent. There's so much good stuff. I love the fight scenes. They were chaotically wonderful to me. I think it's campy. I think it's funny for kids. It's a great twist on the classic, some classic kind of tropes for kids' movies, meaning that it takes place older, like the middle-aged gut punch. I think we should forgive anything you didn't like about it because those things are so good.
Oh,
But
you're trying to skip over a lot
I
here.
am. I'm skipping over a lot because I found it to be really enjoyable.
And that's fine. That's your opinion of it, as we talked
Yeah.
about at the top. If you like Hook, then it's a good movie for you.
Oh, but I think, folks should, listeners should watch it just for Pirate Baseball. And just for, I really loved the Hook character. I just thought Campy Hook is great. And I do want to see, a remake where they just play up the gayness more between Smee
I
and Hook.
really wish they'd made a Smee movie to follow this up. I just want to see like Hook and Smee go on some
You want to
pirate
see a
road
Smee
trip.
backstory?
Smee and Hook, but like make Smee the center of the
Yeah.
movie. Like I want to see all of his backstory and his shenanigans and like he's just fun. So
He is fun. Yeah. So I bet then for the list of things that are cringy and that you didn't like is a little bit longer. So I
hear
did
this,
prepare
to hear
some
this
rebuttals.
tone in her voice. I can see your rebuttals. We share notes.
We do.
I mean, we do this for every single movie we review.
We
We
do.
point out what's cringy, we point out things that annoy us.
Things that did not live up, if you will. Yes.
So, since Jess is going to be the rebuttal on this, I will gladly take the lead on what's not
Oh,
working
gonna
for me
tell
in
me.
this movie. Right off the bat, I just put the script, the directing, the editing. So I went to sit down and watch this the other night, and it was like 8:30 on a Monday, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna watch Hook now, and looked and saw that this is 2.5 hours long. Like, is it an Avengers movie? Like, what is going on here? There's no need for a kid's movie to be 2.5 hours long. That's insane. So I didn't watch it that night because I was like, I don't want to be up till 11 watching this. It's a school night for me, or a work night. Like,
Oh
no,
my
I will
goodness.
watch
Are
this
you a
when
pirate,
I will
Amanda?
watch this later when I have more leisure time. But the reason it's 2.5 hours long, as I'm watching it, there's absolutely moments in here where it's just like you could have cut the scene in half and it would have had all of its like meaning. It feels like the editor dropped the ball, and the editor's dropping the ball because Steven Spielberg had already moved on and is off making Jurassic Park and Schindler's List, which are undoubtedly two of his best movies ever. For example, there's a scene which has funny bits, but it's Hook is pretending to commit suicide by holding a gun to his head.
See, I thought
And
that scene
like,
was really
and
funny.
he's waiting for Smee to rescue him, but like, there's 5 minutes of them just walking around the captain's quarters leading up to him doing that. All you're supposed to take out of this scene is Hook's feeling like his plan isn't working. He's feeling kind of depressed. He's being dramatic and trying to make Smee stop him.
He's like,
And then they
don't
come
try to
up with,
stop me, Smee.
yeah,
And
and
then
then
he's
they
like, don't
come
try to
up,
stop me.
they come up with the idea like, oh, what if you like try to win the children over? That's where the scene is going. Everything before he puts the gun to his head and pretends to commit suicide is just him moping. I got to the halfway point in this movie and was like, oh my God, there's still like 1.5 hours of this. Oh, why?
So I had the opposite. So typically I give points for brevity for kids' movies because, you know, do the shtick, do the gag, and get out, right? There's no reason that this movie should be long. That's typically how I feel about kids' movies in general. But this movie just felt like 5 minutes to me, not 1 second too long. I will even say when we watch it with my kids, we actually started it late. You know, my daughter could stay up late, but my son who's six. And we decided to split it in half. And we actually had a hard time finding a stopping point because the kids were so, we were just all engaged. And we eventually had a stopping point. And then after my son went to bed, we just watched the rest of it with my daughter, who was like really upset that we were not going to finish the movie. Like she was just like, what do you mean we have to wait for another night? I know you're looking at me in disbelief, and the listeners cannot see your look,
Yeah.
the look on your face.
Yep.
So for
It's a
us,
look.
The movie was not too long. It was like totally fine. And the senior referencing is one of my favorite scenes in the movie where Hook is being he's being a drama queen and funny. And Smee has his apostrophe. It's like, don't try to stop me, Smee. Try to stop me, Smee. It's so
Yeah,
funny.
that part's fine. It's the 5 minutes before that, which were
Yeah.
just
So it didn't,
excessive and unnecessary.
I am going to eat these words for, you know, in earlier podcasts, I have criticized length and loved brevity, but in this one, I was fine. It was fine. That's my rebuttal, is that it's
I
fine.
think this movie needed better editing. So the script also, I feel like the script was probably like 150 pages long and they just shot the whole thing without questioning any of it. Normally the director would get in there and be like, wait, so why is Tinkerbell like blown up to human size and trying to make out with Peter?
I mean,
What's
that scene
going on
didn't
here?
make
And like,
sense. You could have
yeah.
cut that scene entirely and didn't need it. I
Yeah, and
totally agree with
that's
that.
totally Steven Spielberg's fault that he didn't flag that scene and go, this is not doing anything for this movie. Can, like, we're just not going to shoot this part. He just went with it. And he's admitted later, like, he felt like he didn't have a grasp of this script and he's just not focused enough to be able to make the call to get some of the stuff out of there.
I do think some of his later movies were a little schmaltzy, and I
Oh,
don't
he's
like.
done plenty of terrible movies.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I didn't. I don't like a lot of movies he's done since the 90s, essentially. I think they're just kind of not that great. They have no editor. I feel that way about Steven Spielberg's movies sometimes, these
Yeah.
later ones. But in this one in particular, I actually think when he does get it right, he gets the emotion right, and I do think he got it right here for me. He had a nice mix of sweet and poignant and funny that worked for me.
It did.
Like totally for both, like all of yeah. the emotions being in this movie. I feel like there wasn't a lot of thought about like the sequencing of it. So like when you have a scene like that battle at the end, where yeah. like we're loving the chaos, we're loving the like things yeah, the being chaos thrown and shot, and you know David Crosby's getting kicked in the nuts and dying or whatever happened there.
Yeah.
Funny, and then Rufio dies. It's such a mood shift, and it's not the right kind of sequencing for that. Like, I didn't want to be suddenly sad at the end of that.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I'll give yeah. you that one.
Yeah, another that I think is totally the fault of the script is, like, this is cringy to me. There are multiple scenes where it seems like the women in his life are just super thirsty for Peter. We've talked about Tinkerbell. That's weird to me.
Yeah.
There's kind of that mermaid orgy that happens. Like, he falls off the ship and they're giving him oxygen, but they pull him down. Like, they cut away abruptly. And when he comes back to the tree with the Lost Boys, Tinkerbell's like, oh, I'm glad you didn't die. That's super weird. Someone's midlife crisis fever dream. The scriptwriter's just like, yeah, and then I could make out with mermaids. And then I could forget I have a wife. And then I could make out with a fairy. There's even a scene where it looks like Granny Wendy's leaning in and is about to kiss him. All I can think
he's
is...
He's into a lot of shit, this
Peter
Pan. Well,
no, Pan. Like, he was 12 years old when they all knew him on Neverland. Why are they all just like, ooh, Peter, hey, why are you all trying to make out with the boy?
So other than the makeout stuff, I mean, I don't find anything wrong with the middle age part, but I will give you that the mermaids were weird. Not much of a rebuttal for me on that one.
Okay, fair, then. So... The first 5 minutes of a movie just standardly is supposed to set the tone for the movie. And the first shot of this is the parents at the school play, but they're just showing
your favorite
child after child after child, just kind of like staring, not with delight, but just kind of like making blank faces at this play that's going on. And you get 5 minutes of an elementary school kid's performance of Peter Pan that has the most annoying song in it. And this is what's setting the tone. I'm seeing it from Peter's angry ass grumpy point of view right now. Like, this is annoying. Like, what an annoying way to start this movie.
Do you need blood for recital scenes, Wednesday Addams? I feel like you do.
I mean, that would have made the recital a lot better, but what if the kids were fighting Captain Hook during that scene? They went with the early, like, oh, it's a thimble. Oh, it's just so boring. And then the
yeah,
song's so bad.
I just felt like that scene was really brief, and to me it set the tone. I thought I enjoyed like the old school camcorders from the 90s in there, so it didn't bother me as much. It felt brief to me.
Like, maybe they keep that in there, but start with Hook plotting something, or just you see the sharpening of a hook, or something more ominous, or something more adventurous, or like,
yeah,
show Hook deciding, like, this is it. I'm going to go get those kids now.
There is a reference to Maggie before she goes to bed, before they get captured, essentially, by Hook. She mentions that there was a window washer in the window talking to them, like, which mm-hmm. is, like, of course, is planting that it's obviously it's Hook or it's Smee that is going to capture them later. So I guess you could have done something funny.
Something like that would have been it.
You could have had Smee trying to pretend to be a window washer in London.
Oh, that would have been
funny.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. Like, kind of a ominous, but like, he's funny.
But sort
like,
of silly.
Yeah. What the hell is he doing at your window? Like,
yeah. What okay. is he doesn't look like he knows what he's doing. Because it's
not washing that
window washer.
Yeah. No, yeah. that would have been a much better first.
Well, look, we fixed it. We fixed
yeah.
it. It's all better now.
We just need to like bring Bob Hoskins back to life and like let's shoot this thing.
Let's just do the CGI thing. It's fine.
God. So that was my take on the beginning, and then I also don't love the ending until they give Toodles his marbles back. Because it's one of those. It's like Lord of the Rings: Return of the King.
Oh yeah, that was a terrible like.
Ended
hour.
Again
yeah.
and then they ended again and then they ended again, and that's what's happening here. There's just layers and layers of goodbyes and more goodbyes and then hellos and then more goodbyes, and we're crying and sometimes we're crying because we're happy and sometimes
you're
we're crying because
you're describing
leaving.
Like an awkward Zoom meeting.
It's oh yeah, like this all could have been a Zoom.
Amanda the order Muppet doesn't like it.
No, so like him digging up his cell phone like he's a dog, and then climbing up the drain pipe and then just throwing the cell phone out the window again, like all of that doesn't have anything to do with whatever this movie's trying to tell us. Like, the movie's trying to, I think, be about him redeeming himself. There's so much going on here, and it's just like, goodbye to the Lost Boys. The Hook is gone. It's way too many endings. Jess, what did you think of the ending?
I mean, I just rolled my eyes at you. I mean, I...
What did you think of the endings, plural, many, too many?
Endings. So to me, it's simpler than that. It's just, we all have to grow up. And that to me is what it's saying. It's nothing more complex than that. However, the ending to me, it had a great chaotic fight scene despite Rufio dying. It had, he died a hero's death. So it had chaotic fighting. It had a hero's death. It had Smee ripping off the boss. It had Peter's full transformation, but then goes back to what's important, which is, you know, we all have to kind of grow up. And I, so to me, all the things that you're describing were just parts of that, and it felt neat to me. So I don't know. I don't know if I've successfully tried this in the court of the Live Up podcast for all my rebuttals here. Not a good defense attorney, I am, but I'm not a pirate. I don't know.
But, you know, kill the lawyers.
Kill the lawyers. But I just... Everything that bothered you, it seemed to snowball, and to me, it either... I didn't notice it, or it felt like such a small detail, it didn't matter. I will give you that mermaids are weird. I, you know, Tinkerbell was sort of a nothing. I didn't love the scene where she confessed her love. I thought it was dumb.
Yeah.
I guess to me, the awesome outweighs anything that could bother you. So to me, that just trumped it to me. So.
Yeah. All right. Well.
This is bad, guys. For fans of this movie, this is not going the way we want it to go.
You're speaking for yourself. I am speaking exactly how I think this should go.
Oh, good Lord. I was thinking about this. We have not ever been so far apart. I mean, maybe we could talk about this.
We have, but yeah.
There have been movies we felt differently about, but this feels super different. I'm so surprised and slightly disappointed.
I note your disappointment. I am also disappointed in this movie.
Oh, killing me. Killing
All right. Me. Do you want to rank first or should I?
Oh, man. Maybe, you know, typically you go first. So I think okay. You should go first. So the first rating, again, this is a rating of 1 to 10. 1 is garbage. 10 is Princess Bride. And this is our rating for, does it live up to you as an adult? What say you, Amanda?
I am being
I'm so nervous.
Generous.
Oh,
with a 4 for adults.
Oh, we're so far apart.
So 4 for adults.
Killed me. I'm going to go a little higher. I am going to give it a 9.
Whoa.
I mean, I
this is the highest you've ever rated a movie for adults over Edward Scissorhands, over Coming to America. Do you stand by this 9?
What did I give Coming to America?
An 8.
Oh, maybe I need to drop this to an 8, but it's hard to compare it. I'm going to stick with my 9 just because I think in the moment watching this movie, I just enjoyed it. It hit all of my emotions. I laughed. I like got emotional. I mean, it was all great for me. And I think if my kids wanted to watch it again tomorrow, I would be totally happy to watch it with them. So I'm sticking with my 9. I'm not going all the way. I did consider a 10, Amanda.
Jeez, and what is wrong with you?
I didn't go all the way for a 10 because there were some little things here and there like Tinkerbell that I was like, I loved it. Oh, no.
I can tell.
So the next rating, which is same scale, 1 to 10, 10 being Princess Bride. This is whether we think it lives up to its intended audience, which is like kids and maybe tween. We're going to be so far apart, but I want to hear what you're going to say.
Well, I'm letting your kids' reaction influence me a little bit, but I'm just going to give this a 6 because I remember my own childhood reaction. And again, I was a little disappointed after I finished watching this as a kid. So 6.
I think this is where I'd love to hear from listeners about what their kids think. I'm going to give this my first 10. For kids.
Jeez, all right.
I know. I wish that I could have given a 10 on a movie that you really liked, but this is me justifying a 10 for kids. I didn't talk about it a ton on the podcast, but my kids loved it. They loved it. Like I said, we couldn't find a stopping point. They liked it so much. We went and watched the Disney one from 1953. And now they're interested in watching the Peter and Wendy movie, the new movie that just came out. They loved all the things I remember loving. I was really trying to take points off to be like, oh, points off for this, points off for that. There's no points I need to take off. It's a 10.
All right.
And like, I think that anyone listening who has, whether you're with children, your own children or nieces or nephews or cousins or whatever, just they'll love this, I promise.
Unless they're a young version of me, in which case they won't.
Unless
like
they're
it.
Wednesday Addams, aka Amanda. Maybe I'm just went insane when I watched this movie. I just can't dock any points for kids. I can't. So, oh God, so the final thing, and we both have to agree, and I think we know the answer here, is that we both have to agree whether it lives up in order to deem it living up. So give it to me, Amanda, just do it. Does this movie live up?
Here's as diplomatic as I can be. It lives up to my memory of it not living up the first time I watched it when I was 11. That this movie had so much potential for greatness, and it just didn't hit the mark
didn't
for
hit
me.
The mark.
No,
yeah, so
it
obviously
doesn't.
It lives up to me, but because we disagree, it's
got to be unanimous.
Yeah, so this is, it's a no.
It's
a no.
The highest rated movie that we have said does not live up.
So listeners, if you haven't listened before, typically I torpedo things.
Yeah, but this is actually a role reversal. Usually Jess goes really low.
Really low. I'm super harsh on ratings, and I just, for some reason, wasn't this time. I really just loved it. I enjoyed it. If you agree with Sourpuss Amanda, or if you agree with Insane Jess, that's kind of what I want to know. We're at Live Up Pod on all the socials. So let us know what you think. We certainly got an earful for Raiders of the Lost Ark.
We did. I have a feeling the Hook fans aren't as aggressive on social media.
I have a feeling too, yeah. So yes, let us know on all that. You could also reach us at liveuppod@gmail.com. And thanks for listening.
Okay, so that was it for this episode reviewing Hook, our split decision. So stay tuned here for a chat with Jordana, the listener who recommended that we review this episode.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. So excited to be featured on my first podcast.
You're famous now.
I know.
Okay, so the reason why we watched Hook for an episode for Live Up is because of a conversation that you and I had the last time I was in New York, when you said it was your favorite movie and your favorite movie that you felt like lived up the most from when you were a kid.
Yeah.
So you're 14 years younger than me and my co-host, and we were sort of surprised that someone much younger than us would have a memory of watching this so much growing up. So why did you like it when you were a kid?
I think Peter Pan was like probably up there with like top Disney stories. I really liked watching.
Like the old school Peter Pan?
Yeah, the one that was the live version that was, I think, VHS recorded. My parents like filmed it that it was like on TV. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And so then I think Hook equally was already out when I was 5 or 6.
Did you watch Hook off of a VHS too?
I definitely didn't own it, but it was probably something we rented from the video store was probably how I first saw it.
Yeah.
But then it was also on TV a lot as a kid.
Yeah, I feel like it was one of those that made the rounds.
Yeah.
So you've then seen it as an adult since.
Yeah, so during COVID, my roommates, I don't think, had seen it. And I was like, this movie is the best. And we watched it, and they became so addicted. I'm a huge like movie quoter. And so like there was just so many good lines in the movie that we just kept saying around the house afterward. We still in our text chat all the time. Text random Hook quotes.
So what's a quote that you guys would do in your text or that resonated with a bunch of millennials?
This one doesn't resonate with millennials, I'm not sure, but the conversation towards the end of the movie where Peter is just like, here's the marbles back, and he's like,
Toodles.
He really did. Yes, Toodles. He's like, he really did lose his marbles. And all the time, anytime someone says something, everyone's like, yeah, he lost them good. I don't know why, but my friend loves to say that all the time. We took a picture of the screen in that moment, and that was like our group chat icon.
That's hilarious. So it's funny because when I was visiting you guys in New York, you had mentioned that this was a really quotable movie. And then when Amanda and I were deciding what movie to do next, I mentioned, I was like, oh, my cousin Jordana thinks that this is really quotable. It's her favorite movie. And she's like, quotable? I don't remember all the lines. But I have to say, rewatching it, there's great lines in here. There's the marbles line. Is it you, my great and worthy opponent? Like, it's such,
yes.
It's so good.
You need a mommy. And just all the mommy quotes. Mommy.
Yes.
That one's my favorite, is the, come on, mommy could do it.
Yes, that's when he's like still a lawyer schlub and has not realized he's Peter Pan yet.
Yeah.
Okay, so you had said that you think this one, to you, lives up the most.
But like equally like to Princess Bride, like I think that is a good scale, is from one to Princess Bride is a good scale. And I showed my roommates that movie also during COVID.
Had they not seen Princess Bride?
I don't think so. So one of my roommates...
Were your roommates like, raised by wolves? What's going on there?
Yeah, I think so. No, I mean, they were. One of my roommates is like a cuss. She's technically, I think, Gen Z, but she has three older brothers. So she's like kind of millennial. Like she feels very mature. They're from Florida, so they probably just watch different movies. Yeah,
okay, hate mail from Florida. That's fine. Yeah. So I'm actually curious, because so then you watched it as an adult again amongst people, amongst Floridians. Who did not watch it. And so did they laugh when you expected them to laugh? And did they like all the things that you remember liking, or did it like hit differently for you?
I watched it with her and her brother who moved up to New York. They loved it. They might as well like be my cousins. They're our cousins.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Disclosure that we are cousins. Yeah. And so I watched this with my kids, obviously, your cousins. What are your thoughts on whether you think this would land with kids today?
There's not much to explain. I feel like your Ferris Bueller episode opened me up. Like, kids don't know about these things.
Like landline phones.
My mom still has an answering machine.
Right, right.
I don't know if there's that much to explain. I mean, it's Peter Pan, like, and it's a cartoon that kids are familiar with that is just, like, live action almost.
Yeah, what's funny is that my kids don't really actually know the Peter Pan story that well. I mean, I think they might have seen it once, like the old school animation, but there was still enough there for them. Even if you're not familiar with Peter Pan, I think it's still so much fun. Yeah, honestly.
I feel like it exists in a bubble of like, it could be any time period almost. Like you switch out the cell phone and it could be today.
So one thing that hit me differently as an adult, it just felt more emotional to me as an adult. Did you feel that, or is that just me?
Not to leave you out in the cold, but I think it's just you. When you were texting me that you were crying, I was like, I don't know what part. Yeah. I think the end is sweet, probably. Like the reuniting of the family and him coming to the realization of like how he's been as a father, and maybe a little bit of like clear, like emptiness Jack feels of his father. Those things are definitely emotional, but maybe I cried at the end, but I can't remember.
So in your mind, not to put words in your mouth, you think there's still enough for those who are in their 20s and 30s, whether they've watched it as a kid or not, that there's enough for them here?
Yeah, I think it's a 90s kid movie for sure. As well as prior to 90s. I think like even after the fact, I think it just really does still hit. I'm going to show it to my kids one day. So we'll have a follow-up podcast.
We'll have a follow-up years later.
Yeah. Okay. Well, send a reminder for 15 years from now.
Okay, put in your phone now.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I think that you're going to help me make my case, just in case a man does a Debbie Downer.
Just a quick note here to say that I recorded this interview with Jordana before we recorded the podcast, and listeners, as you know, Amanda was indeed a Debbie Downer for this episode.
I'm more so hoping that we've like fully won her, like she rewatches it and is just like, wow, mind blown and changed forever.
That's what I'm hoping happens.
Again, did not happen.
Okay, I love you. Have a good night.
Love you too. Good night.
Special thanks, Jordana, for participating in this episode. And for all the other listeners out there, we love recommendations. You don't have to be related to us to give us one. So hit us up at Live Up Pod on all the socials and let us know what you want us to review. Thanks, everyone.